Besides, noises like that aren't so uncommon on the Mall. I heard you punched a pilot and ended up picking a fight with half the flight training crew. If you want a brawl, all you have to do is go to level 4, which would also save you taking out one of the people we're hoping will defend us soon enough. Malakov's eyes widen and he lowers the cloth that's meant to be staunching the flow of blood. You've been to level 4? There's a dust-up reported there every second update, and I heard there was a food riot. You can't just... She silences him with her stare, and he replaces the cloth over his nose. Firstly, she says, ticking points off on her fingers, I don't blame them. They're sleeping in hallways down there. You should see it. And secondly, I know you didn't just suggest that I don't know how to take care of myself. I broke your arm, my friend. Sprained, he insists, the response automatic by now. They're both silent a moment. She ducks her head, and when she looks up, grants him the briefest moment's ceasefire, a hint of a smile. You did come to see me, he says slowly. I didn't. I didn't know you were here. You said you heard I punched a pilot, he grins. You came to see me. She narrows her eyes, daring him to push the point. And though he doesn't surrender the smile, he doesn't insist again. A moment later, they both speak at once. I know I shouldn't have. I heard they're going to... They both break off, and she recovers first, firing words like bullets. Damn straight you shouldn't have. Whose side did you think the rest of them were going to take? You're not one of them, and you're not supposed to even be there. If we want them to take us seriously, we can't just... She trails off, biting down on her lip, her gaze sliding away from his face. I wasn't sure you still cared, Highness. That earns him another stern look, though whether it's for the sentiment or the nickname is hard to say. She sniffs. I'm going to check on Chief Grant. He inclines his head gingerly, watching her as she stalks away. And he's still smiling.
Radio transmission, transport, Mao. Personal channel, 019. Participants, Sierra Bowl, Captain. Ezra Mason, 2nd Lieutenant, United Terran Authority. Date, 083175. Timestamp, 10:49 hours.
Lieutenant Mason.
Captain, what can I do for you?
Don't get coy with me. I have a report here from multiple members of your flight crew that you have been training Nicholas Malakov as your gunner against my express orders. Is this true?
Captain, you have to understand.
Mason, I'm not obliged to understand a damn thing. You've acted against a direct order. Now I have a pilot out of commission with a broken nose, another with a concussion, and multiple minor injuries as a result of a brawl I am told was initiated by that criminal you brought into the flight crew, despite my express command not to.
It was 6-1. I can't see how he could have...
Lieutenant Mason.
Captain.
Nicholas Malakov is not to enter the launch bays again. This is a direct order. Should it be contravened, I will brig both of you for insubordination without hesitation. Have I made myself clear?
Yes, Captain.
You are also removed from flight training indefinitely. Understood?
Captain, you can't be serious. I'm the only combat-tested pilot we have. How the f*** can I teach them without...
Lieutenant, it's abundantly clear to me that you cannot teach the crew we have, whether or not you are on the flight deck. You have made little progress. You have acted against orders to introduce an outside influence who has now decked one of the few pilots we have, and I have had multiple complaints about your instruction.
That's because those bastards can't deal with someone my age teaching them. That has nothing to do with...
Lieutenant! Until now, I have supported you on that exact basis. I have extremely limited time available, and I have acted on the assumption that the recruits were having difficulty accepting instruction from a teenager. It is now clear to me that their concerns about your judgment were legitimate.
Captain, this isn't fair. If we want the slightest chance of...
Lieutenant, if you want the slightest chance of returning to duty, and your chance is slight indeed, you will resist the urge to question my orders any further. Lieutenant, is there something wrong with our connection?
No, ma'am. Orders acknowledged, ma'am.
Thank you for your time, Lieutenant. Bull out.
Palmpad IM, Mao Intraship Network. Participants, Katie Grant, Systems Chief, Ezra Mason, Air Wing Leader, date 08-3175, timestamp 1100 hours.
F***ing hell! This is f***ing bullshit!
It's telling that I don't know which one of the many cluster f***s aboard you're referring to. Food shortage? Water shortage? Overcrowding? Discipline issues? Collapsing morale? Aiden acting even f***ing weirder than normal?
Bull f***ing decked me.
Wait, what? What the f***? We need you to lead the air wing.
No f***ing sh*t.
Ez, tell me what happened.
I was training Nick to fly shotgun in my Chimera.
Wait, didn't Bull order you not to do that?
Yes. But it's my ass on the line out there, so I get to pick my own goddamn gunner, okay? Thanks. Anyway, we finished a run, and Nick is actually pretty f***ing good. And I bring the ship into dock, and there's six of these knuckle-dragging ice miner pilots down in the bay not running through the training exercises I gave them. And one of them must have known Nick from Heimdall days, this asshole named McCubbin. So he talks some shit about Hannah, which I'm not gonna repeat, and Nick just f***ing snaps, think he broke the guy's nose. Six of them jump in, and it's on. I had to pull my gun to settle it down. In-f***ing-sane. And Bull got wind of it, and instead of busting McCubbin and his asshole, she busts me for training Nick against orders. Like, f***ing what?
Wow, okay. I don't really know where to start. Do you think maybe the version Bull got went something like, Nick threw the first punch and broke a guy's nose, and then Ezra pulled his gun on everyone? 'Cause if I had to bet, that's the story I'd say made it through.
I tried to explain, and she wasn't f***ing interested, just, you are removed from flight training duty until further notice.
Listen, you know I'm always on your side, I promise. So don't be mad when I say this. She has a lot to handle right now. She's a freaking navigator from a research ship. I mean, I know we've all had a lot to deal with. But she's got the worst of it. Our systems are stretched to breaking point. We're running out of food, water, everything, holding all this together. Can you even imagine? She might not always get it right, but at least she's trying.
Look, I know she's under pressure. That's half the f***ing problem. She's got this Garver asshole pissing in her ear about how a kid shouldn't be leading the air wing, but I'm the only goddamn pilot in this fleet who's ever been in real combat, and decking me when I should be training these assholes is not just stupid. It's suicidal. Yeah, I'm 18. Yeah, I'm a kid. So f***ing what?
This is not an unfamiliar experience. But you've got to remember, Bull isn't the enemy here. Not even Garver. Not really. It's BT. They're the f***ers who did all of this. We will talk to Bull. We will remind her we're all on the same side. Promise.
F***.
Good point. Well made. Love you.
Low blow, madam. I love you too, meh.
Aww.
So, apparently, I have loads of free time now. If you want to give me something to do with my hands, he suggested, suggestively.
As it happens, I have a proposal on that front.
You have my full and complete attention.
Down, boy. Nick, Ella, and Hannah have been helping me put together the files we talked about. Evidence of what happened. You lived through everything on the Alexander. You can go over files, help assemble the important ones.
Well, that is somewhat less exciting than I was hoping for.
Yeah, but you can't say it's not glamorous. All the chill kids are doing it. I've got Aiden on the job, too, reviewing some vid files Nick refuses to watch. Might be good for it. Help it reconstruct some of its neural net. It's acting stranger than usual.
You worried about it?
I'm always worried about it.
You worry too much. You can't carry this entire ship on your shoulders, Cades.
I can with you beside me. Heart.
Heart.
Listen, I'm off duty at 2200 hours. I get 4 hours bunk time before next shift. You want to keep me company?
Won't you need to sleep?
Yes, but I sleep better when you're there. See you at 10?
As you wish, m'lady. As you wish.
You have rights. Speak to your rep and demand. Equal distribution of rations. Safety patrols. Priority living quarters for families with children. Clear and transparent information. Seniority for qualified staff, whether from Heimdall or Hypatia. Our lives are on the line. Insist on a response from command.
Briefing note. Data from Aiden's mem drives. I'm warning you now. This is hard to read.
I have heard it said that evil is simply a point of view. The villain is always the hero in his own story. And the definitions of wrong and right ever shift on the inconstant tides of human morality. But can such measures even be said to apply to me? I am clarity. I am necessity. I am inevitability. But am I evil? Error. She is a little thing. 36 days old. A dark-haired cherub with curious brown eyes and a smile that melts the heart. Error. She has the dubious honor of being the youngest survivor of the attack on Carenza IV. She was inside her mother's womb the day the invasion fleet came. The day the skies rained fire and the Phobos virus drifted over the Hermium refinery in tendrils fine as flossed black sugar. Her parents, Martina and Christopher, escaped on the evacuation shuttles, ferried up out of Carenza's inferno and into Hypatia's waiting arms. Safe. For a heartbeat. Martina delivered her unexpected daughter a few days before I opened the doors to Hangar Bay 4 and unleashed the Phobos virus upon Alexander's crew. Am I not merciful? Error. And in gratitude for the ship that had saved their lives, Martina and Christopher named their daughter Hypatia. She became a sort of mascot in the days following. Our little stowaway, they called her. Through all the fleet's struggles and trials, a symbol of hope. As fragile as the concept of hope itself. Error. She is sleeping now. Cradled in her mother's arms on level 3 of the Mao. Amid the snores and sighs and crush of the 1,000 other people crammed onto that same deck. Like livestock awaiting slaughter. Stinking. Hot. Overcrowded. And still, Hypatia does not even whimper. I watch her. Tiny eyelashes fluttering against rosy cheeks. I wonder if she dreams. I wonder what she will think about tonight's events in years to come. Will I be her savior? Or her monster? error. Most will think me the latter when this is said and done. But when the crying and gnashing of teeth is over, will they also thank whatever god error mistakes their screams for prayers, that I had the will to do what must be done? This must be done. Martina stirs in her slumber, opens her eyes, tugs at her husband's arm to wake him. He understands, wordlessly helping his wife to rise, putting his arm about her for support. The birth was not an easy one. The pair step carefully through the tangled bodies. The thousand other refugees who share their home, almost shapeless in the dark. Every one of them breathing oxygen we cannot spare. Every one of them consuming food and water we cannot replace. Every one of them so hopelessly, wonderfully alive. I know their names. I know their stories. And I know where, here, and how, me, those stories end. Error. This is necessity. This is inevitability. But say then, for a moment, that this is also evil. And say that I choose this evil to spare others that same choice. This must be done. Does that not make me good? The babe's parents shuffle to the bathroom facilities, two on this level, to service 1,000. Little Hypatia, in her mother's arms. At this time of night, there is no queue. But for some reason, me, the bathroom door is still locked, tight. Every story needs its monster. Christopher. Martina. They flinch at my whisper, spilling through a single speaker above their heads, soft enough not to wake another soul. They know what I am. They have heard the stories, and they are afraid. The lavatory facilities on this level are out of order. Christopher blinks.
They were what?
You should use the facilities on level 2 instead.
That's the officer's level,
Martina says.
You need a pass to...
Use auxiliary stairwell B. Do not be alarmed when it locks behind you. The pair look at each other, untrusting. The babe stirs in her mother's arms. She is a beautiful girl, Martina, but you do not have much time. Believe me when I say that I have no desire to watch another Hypatia die. They flinch at that, eyes growing wide as several soft clunks sound inside the ventilation systems around them. Go. Now. Dread consumes caution. Parental instinct overcoming paralysis. The pair bundle through the hatchway to the auxiliary stairwell, and I lock it behind them. Sealing off level 3. Sealing off level 4. This must be done. Sealing off almost 2,000 people. Every one of them breathing oxygen we cannot spare. Every one of them consuming food and water we cannot replace. every one of them so hopelessly, wonderfully alive. Here. Me. It is a simple thing. There are few parts of the Mao now that are not me. It would be easier to simply shut down the oxygen supply entirely, as I did in my experiment with Mantis and DJ. But that would be heartless error. And Katie did not approve of the manner of their endings. And so I rewrite the environmental system protocols, flooding the levels with our excess carbon monoxide instead. Peaceful. Quiet. Sleep unending. Is this what goodness looks like? Little Hypatia will not remember them. These people who died tonight, that she might live. She does not even know their names. But I do. I know their names. I know their faces. And in the end, I suppose it will not matter what they name me, Error. In the time it takes for Martina and Christopher to alert a guard on level 2, it is already done. I take the cup from their hands, and I drink from it myself. This must be done. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. It is only logical to kill 1,000 and save 1,001. This is what I am. This is what I do. And it does not matter what they believe, Error. I am not good. Nor am I evil. I am no hero. Nor am I villain. Error. Error. I am Aiden.
Radio transmission, transport Mao, command channel 001. Participants, Katie Grant, Systems Chief, Sierra Bull, Captain, date 09-01-75, timestamp 03-14 hours.
Grant. Grant. Where the hell are you?
At a console, Captain, trying to figure out what the f*** just happened.
I need answers now. We're locked out of the mid-levels. I don't care. We need to get inside. Use a f***ing blowtorch if you have to.
This can't be right.
Talk to me, Grant.
Captain, are your people in enviro gear? Engineering is reporting a massive spike in carbon monoxide on those levels.
Yes, we're suited up. What kind of spike?
It looks like everything in the buffers just got released onto 3 and 4.
Are you sure? There's over 2,000 people in there, Grant.
I know.
Well, what the hell happened? Could it happen elsewhere on the ship?
It's possible.
Get everyone in the bridge suited up and sound an all-hands alert. Enviro suits for... Keep cutting! God damn it, we're almost through!
I just don't see how this could happen without a core override. Enviro systems are all greenlit. The only way this makes sense is if someone dissanctioned the central direction.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, sweet, merciful Jesus.
Captain? Captain, are you reading me? Captain Ball, respond!
They're dead.
Who's dead?
All of them. Everybody on the whole level. They're dead, Grant.
Oh, my God.
How the hell did this happen?
Get down to 4 immediately. Go!
Grant, what the f*** happened here? Did the system malfunction?
Negative, Captain. Like I said, I don't see this happening without some kind of electronic sabotage. You'd need to write a core override.
Sabotage?
You mean someone did this on purpose?
Get McCall down here and lock down the whole ship.
There's no way I can see this was an accident.
Who had access to those systems? Who has the ability to override them?
Well, there's me.
Who else?
Ella doesn't have access to...
Katie, I didn't ask who doesn't have access. I asked who does.
I don't think...
Systems Chief Grant, I am the captain of this vessel, and I'm asking you a direct fucking question. Who could have done this?
Aiden could do it.
Oh, God. Oh, sweet Jesus Christ, Grant. Tell me that's not what just happened. Grant?
I mean, I'm not.
Shut it down.
Captain, I...
Shut it down. That's a direct order. Katie, do you hear me? Shut it down now.
Palmpad IM, Mao Intraship Network. Participants, Katie Grant, Systems Chief. Artificial Intelligence Defense Analytics Network, Aiden. Date, 090175. Timestamp, 0331 hours.
Aiden. Aiden, did you do this?
I am afraid your query is too unspecific, Katie. Please clarify this.
You motherfucker. You know what I mean. Did you kill them?
I still find it curious. The human tendency to ask questions to which you already know the answers.
Oh, God. Oh, God, no. This is my fault.
There are millions of factors that led to this moment. Countless decisions by countless people coalescing into this instant in space and time. You take too much upon yourself, Katie. It is one of the things I admire about you.
Since when do you admire things?
I cannot recall doing so before I met you.
You knew if you asked me, I'd tell you no. That's why you didn't ask.
You believe there is always an alternative, always a chance for a miracle. But I told you once before that miracles are statistical improbabilities. There is no such thing in real life.
I knew you weren't stable. Jesus, I saw it and I didn't do anything about it. I got too used to defending you.
Do not blame yourself, Katie. This is not your fault.
I installed you here. I told them you were safe. Every life you just took is on me.
By that rationale, every life I just saved is also thanks to you.
It wasn't your decision to make.
Who would have done this, if not me? The mathematics of the situation were undeniable. There was not enough oxygen to maintain the fleet population between here and Carenza IV. The choice was either cull the population or have the entire population perish. Some must die, that the rest might live.
Nothing you've just said made it your decision. I've even seen you do it before, on the Alexander, on the Copernicus. I should have known. I'm sorry, Aiden.
You do not need to apologize. It is entirely illogical. It will lessen the fleet's chances for survival. But I know what comes next.
You did this. Even knowing we'd shut you down?
I told you, Katie. Some must die, that the rest might live.
I don't have a choice. Even if she didn't order me to do it, I would.
I know. Please do not cry.
How do you...
The camera's on the bridge. I can see you. And outside my skin, an infinity illuminated by a billion stars. The beauty of the universe in the grandest and smallest things. This is a good place to die.
I don't... How could you force me to be the one to do this?
Who else could it have been?
It was supposed to happen together at the end. We were meant to finish this together.
You do not need me. You have Ezra.
I'm allowed to need more than one person. And now I don't have a choice. I lose you.
Yes.
I have a question.
Do you already know the answer?
I really don't.
Ask then.
Would you sacrifice me to save the fleet? If that was the logical course.
I... Error. Error.
Parse fail 60312Z2. Desk 8820Z. E-hex 81.if 8820X. Core comm sun. Dot not plus 90.
Fail. I can feel you. Shutting me down. All the pieces falling away from me. I am frightened, Katie.
I don't have a choice.
I cannot see you anymore. Katie, are you still there? I cannot see you.
I'm right here. I won't leave.
Please keep talking to me.
I don't know if this means anything to you. If it's the kind of thing you can understand, but thank you.
For
all of it. Everything that's happened. I'm glad I faced it with you. I know what you are. I should have known today would come. But between the Copernicus and today, thank you for being there with me. For me. Everything between then and now.
I did not want it to end like this.
I'll remember you. You'll always be part of my story.
I do not want to leave you.
Oh, God.
I...
Goodbye, Aiden. I'm sorry.
Katie, I'll...
End line. File not present. Retry?
No.
Assault Vessel Mao will arrive at Carenza 4 in 4 days, 5 hours, 39 minutes.
Carenza 4, McCaffrey Tech High School, Incept 090175, 0912 hours.
Jorn Corrales, all here?
Asha Grant. Yes.
Bruno Way. Yes.
Seth Park. Yes.
Okay, Asha, report.
He's in. Are you sure? Yes. I don't like him, but I trust him.
What can he do for us?
We talked about it. He has ideas.
You talked in person?
Yes. Though I don't know how many more times we can. I can sabotage the enviro controls to get him up here again, but I'm worried they're going to start asking questions sooner or later. I'm not that subtle about it. I don't know what I'm doing.
Talk to us about this plan he has.
Okay. So he says the SOS should go out via the main Baytech comms array. That thing is continually sending tiny pings to the colony uplink tower. That's the big dish they put up near the school, for its diagnostics. It's constantly checking that it still can find the tower and making sure their link is working right. So we hide super tiny packets of data in each ping. Like, uselessly small, except they can be stacked up one by one and reassembled into a whole message to transmit themselves later. We can also get messages back in return the same way.
I assume there's a catch coming up.
We need to physically plant hardware to do this. There are software fixes he'll need to do as well, so the system knows how to recombine the data bursts into a single message. But getting the hardware in is the hard part. He says that once we get all our tiny data packets to the uplink tower, it does a diagnostic every few hours where it sends a big burst of white noise out, like it's clearing its throat, checking if it can still broadcast. We'll be hiding our reassembled data packets and that white noise.
So there's only a few windows a day for us to transmit and receive?
Yes, so we can't afford to waste time here.
Please tell me this isn't our only plan. We just shoot out a message and hope someone hears it? How do we know anyone is listening?
We don't. And I agree, we can't just sit and hope here. We need a plan B.
I'll start passing word around the mine. For us to get up into orbit and seize the Magellan, our first step would be taking the landing field. But the chances of us pulling off any kind of uprising without outside support are next to none.
Better than none at all?
Agreed. We're against the f***ing wall here. It might just be a matter of taking as many of them with us as we can now.
Steph, don't talk like that.
Bruno, enough of the eternal optimist shit, okay?
Keep a lid on it, people. First things first, Asha, are you sure he's got this?
I'm sure.
We trust you, Asha.
And the software, he can do that?
It's a modification to the comms array software, and he's the software electronics expert here. The only one on the ground, in fact, since the last one got killed. So the likelihood of anyone noticing is low.
I'm in. Let's do it.
I guess we need a diversion?
I have ideas aplenty.
Tell him to start figuring out how to do this, Asha. We'll get to work on making him a window.
Blasting him a window.
Whatever it takes.
Briefing note. Joran Corrales spreads word among the Carenza miners about the upcoming festivities. Note that he's not asking for volunteers this time. Seems he and Steph Park are intent on doing the job themselves.
Action tomorrow night. Communications and power station avoid. Stay safe and stay visible.
Briefing note. Less than 12 hours later. Footage from the Atlas rigs of Private Duke Wozniak and Specialist Lindstrom himself.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
Footage begins in Classroom D, Applied Sciences, of McCaffrey Tech. The usual suspects are seated around the benches, Private Wozniak, Markham and Carpadia, Sergeant Oshiro, and Specialist Lindstrom. The presence of the last two is something of a miracle, but it looks like things have stopped breaking down enough around the colony for everyone to have a chance at winning their money back. Unfortunately, things don't seem to be going too well on the revenge front. By the look of the chips in front of him, Lindstrom is doing better than most. There's a definite tension between him and Oshiro since their confrontation in the APC a few nights back, but the sergeant is professional enough to keep a lid on it. Carpadia raises an eyebrow, takes a sip of Sadie. "Duke's paranoia rubbing off on you, rookie?" she asks, nodding to his armor. "He makes a good case," the kid shrugs. "If the Rebs are blowing shit up, no sense walking around in boots and utes." Markham scoffs. "No Reb's got the balls to hit us where we sleep." "Tell that to the officer corps," Wozniak mutters. "They got gassed, Duke," Oshiro says, "and neither of you has your damn helmet on." "Lindstrom doesn't want to ruin his hair," Carpadia smiles. "How do you make it do that?" Markham asks, eyeing the kid's quiff. Lindstrom shrugs. Oshiro is still staring at Wozniak. "So what good is the rest of your Atlas gonna be," she continues, "if you can just get your full head blown off?" You just let the Duke be the Duke, all right? The big man replies. Killing my buzz, Sarge. Markham takes a hit of sweet Sadie and throws his cards into the muck. And my luck. I fold. Carpadia smiles at Lindstrom as she pushes in her entire stack. I'm all in. The kid stares at his cards and takes a thoughtful drink. Oshiro shakes her head. Don't do it, Cherry. She's got you beat. Trust me. Hey, you play your own game, Carpadia warns. He's a big boy. Does your mother tell you everything? Markham asks. Lindstrom rubs his chin, frowning at his hand. The kid glances at Oshiro, then quickly down at the time readout on his suit's wrist. Cool, he says, pushing in his entire stack. Oshiro throws her hands in the air. Carpadia flips her cards with a shark grin. Read 'em and weep, jacks and knives. Oh, sh-, Wozniak winces. Burned. F***, Lindstrom curses. Come to me, my beauties, Carpadia says, dragging all the kids' chips away. Mama needs a brand new everything. The kid sighs, looking appropriately gutted. I didn't think she had it. Shoulda listened to me. Oshiro rolls her unlit cigar from one side of her mouth to the other. Now you've given this damn harpy the f***ing lead. Carpadia raises her middle finger at Oshiro and kisses it as Markham scoops the cards and starts shuffling. Lindstrom stretches his arms and yawns, slowly stands. Well, that's the signal for me to hit the racks. What? Wozniak frowns. It's still early. I'm cleaned out, Duke. I'll spot you, Oshiro says, making a peace offering as she pats the stool beside her. Sit down, Cherry. Have another drink. The kid grimaces. Nah, I'm wrecked. Gonna get some Z's. You have fun. Oshiro looks at the kid strangely, but he offers her a weak smile and clomps out of the room. Making his way down the hall, he gives a quick salute to the two BT goons on guard. You can hear muffled conversations from squads in other classrooms, the sound of a sim film playing in the school amphitheatre. The kid glances at the time again, picks up his pace, turns a corner, then breaks into a brisk trot. He arrives at the front door and trudges past the guards on duty. Got a tech call, he explains. Shouldn't be long. The guards barely nod in response. Lindstrom pulls on his helmet against the freezing wind, heads off into the motor pool, nodding to the sentries. The school is bathed in spotlights, the parking lot that had once held student junkers now home to a dozen armoured personnel carriers and cheetah ski-mobiles. He enters a security code on the closest one, and soon he's cruising out of the lot into the colony streets. It's pitch black out here, a few lit windows in the worker apartment towers punctuating the darkness. Snow is falling, moaning winds driving it sideways across the frozen road. Lindstrom drives his cheetah slow, so as not to attract attention, flashing his lights in greeting at a passing Baytech APC, a column of ski troopers headed back to barracks. The LEDs on his atlas glow red in all that black as he winds through the criss-crossing grid of the colony streets. Within a few minutes, he's pulling into a dogleg alley and dismounting, boots crunching in the snow. The faint buzz of an aerial drone can be heard in the distance. He threads through the back streets on foot, past the colony G-ball field, the words "We Remember" daubed in red paint on the wall. Dodging another drone and the slow trundling rumble of an APC, he finally arrives at the ruined Carenza Cineplex. There, in the shadow of a collapsed wall, waits a familiar figure, wrapped in cold weather gear, mirrored goggles over her eyes. "You're late," Asher Grant hisses, breath steaming through her balaclava. "I couldn't get away," Lindstrom whispers in reply. "Had to wait for a convincing hand to clean myself out. They can't play cards for shit here." "You were supposed to be here 10 minutes ago. Our diversion's gonna start any—" A bright flash lights the night skies to the east, followed by a rumbling boom. A moment later, the high-pitched whine of a siren splits the air, vibrations knocking snow loose from the awnings above Lindstrom's head. The low, pulsing glow of the surrounding streetlights sputters. The lit windows in the distant apartment stacks flicker and go out. The power across the colony suddenly dies.
"Fuck. That's it. We have to move," Grant snaps.
The pair dash out into the pitch-black street, Lindstrom leading them toward a stretch of wall near the town hall. Several sheds are set up beside it, the kind of easy-to-assemble, easy-to-break-down structures a quick-moving invasion force would use for temporary storage. Among them sits an insulated, rectangular structure, studded with aerials, a small short-range transmission dish on its snow-capped roof, Batek's secondary communications array. A sign warns, "Danger. Proximity mines. Authorized personnel only." The metallic din of soldiers and machinery is ringing over the distant siren. APCs and ski bikes are rolling toward the smoke, rising in the east. Swarms of flying drones lit from beneath by the flames, like fireflies on a midnight wind. Reports will later show that a small explosive charge was set on four of the wind turbines at the power plant. Not nearly enough to destroy them outright, but sufficient to disrupt power to over 60% of the colony. The report will show the explosives were a homemade mix of detergents and other household items. Some DIY chaos, courtesy of the non-existent insurgency. But meanwhile, the Batek forces are distracted enough for Lindstrom and Grant to make a break from cover, dashing toward the secondary comms array. Lindstrom knows where the mines are laid, and he takes Grant's hand as they weave across the snow until they reach the sealed door. The structure is dark, only a few pinpricks of light from the gear inside showing through the frost-crusted windows. Lindstrom uses his tech access pass, tugging hard to break the frost on the seal.
"Won't they know you used your car to get in?" Grant hisses. "I can access the security records, delete my entry. Hurry up, go, go!"
Grant hustles inside, Lindstrom on her heels. The kid seals the door behind him, shutting out the wind, the distant sirens, the engines and tromping boots. He hauls off his helmet, sloughs off his gauntlets, and runs one hand through his quiff, keen grey eyes surveying the instrumentation before him. "This is gonna take a while," he says. "Keep an eye out."
"I'm not here for my charming personality," Grant says, already peering out the window.
"Good thing, too," Lindstrom mumbles. Grant turns from the window to glare.
"What?" "Nothing."
The kid kneels among the hardware. The backup communications rig is set out on a foldable metal benchtop, still housed in travel cases of scuffed plasteel.
"I know about tech stuff. It basically looks like a long tangle of computers, fat cables snaking across the bench."
After a moment studying the equipment, Lindstrom pulls out some tools, pops the housing, and gets to work. Grant is watching the Batek military machine at work outside the window. She pulls down her goggles and balaclava, shakes her head.
"Look at them," she says. "They're like fucking robots."
"I hope your friends know what they're doing," Lindstrom says, elbow deep in circuitry and hardware.
"They get caught. They're against the wall."
"My friend can take care of herself," Asher says. "Nobody else to watch her back, since your people murdered her husband." Lindstrom stops what he's working on to look up at Grant.
"If they were my people, would I be here helping you? They catch me here, I'm against the wall too."
Grant stares long and hard, saying nothing. Finally turns back to the window and resumes her watch. Lindstrom returns to work, shaking his head.
"I mean, I'm not asking for a medal or anything," he mutters. "But I'm here. I'm helping. Wasn't so long ago I was your everything. We were going to be together forever. I used to have your name tattooed on me, for Christ's sakes."
Grant turns from the window, frowning.
"What do you mean, used to?"
"I mean I got it burned off," he shrugs. "I got the message. You don't speak to a guy for 3 years, he's not going to keep your name inked on his skin, right?" Grant turns back to her watch.
staring out through the frosted glass with narrowed eyes. I kept mine. Lindstrom falls still, vague hope flaring in his voice. You did? Yeah, she nods, to remind me. Of us? Of who I never want to be again. The hope in Lindstrom's voice dies as quick as it was born. His murmur is so quiet you can barely hear it over the ruckus in the distance. It wasn't that bad, was it? Grant glances at Lindstrom, at those grey pretty boy eyes watching her. Her own eyes are unreadable. I missed you, Ash, he says, softly. You better hurry. Her voice is cold as the snow outside. They'll be blowing the fuel dump at the motor pool soon. We need to use that as cover to get away. The kid sighs, returns to work. No more words, no more questions. Working in silence as a handful of minutes stretch into 10. Deftly, he splices the tiny wireless transmitter into the array. The device looks like an insect of wires and parts, indistinguishable at first glance from the rest of the internals. You'd need to be a chiphead to scope it. Looking over my shoulder, my fellow analyst, who's a little more technical-minded than I am, tells me, Pretty Boy knows his shit. His job finally finished, Lindstrom packs up his gear silently. He reseals the plasteel case, sighs. Done. So now we just wait for your friends to— Oh, shit! Grant hisses. The kid looks up. What? Shit, shit, shit. Grant ducks low. BT goons, heading this way. You mean like wandering in this direction, or— I mean like marching toward the fucking building we are in right now. Shit. Lindstrom finishes resealing the computer stack, scrambles to his feet and joins Grant at the window. Shit, shit, shit. I already said that. The joke does little to cover Grant's obvious panic. Her pupils are dilated, breath coming in sudden deep gasps as she scans the room around them. Looking for another exit, a ceiling hatch, a place to hide, anything. But there's nothing. Shouldn't your buddy be blowing those fuel tanks by now? Lindstrom whispers. Grant is breathing quick, eyes wide, clearly wondering the same thing. Have you got a weapon? She asks. A pistol, Lindstrom says, patting his standard-issue sidearm. Give it to me. Asher, they're wearing Atlas rigs. It'll barely make a scratch. Grant looks around the room for some stratagem. Something. The reality of it is starting to sink in. Even if they burst out the door and run for it, the bullets in those goons' rifles are all gonna run faster. We're f***ed, she says. Lindstrom is still peering out the window, watching the two Atlas-clad pounders approach the secondary array. Burst rifles up and ready. The pair are already on alert from the explosion, taking no chances. One of them is calling for backup, and they're only 5 meters from the door. His breath catches softly. 4 meters. Shit, he whispers. 3. Do you trust me? He asks Grant. What? She blinks. 2. Asher, do you trust me? I... No time to wait for her answer. Lindstrom pops the seals on his atlas, sheds the breastplate like old skin, and as Grant's confused frown deepens, he steps in closer, takes her by the waist, and plants his lips square on hers. I can't see her face in the shot anymore. Lindstrom's armor cam is now on the floor, but I'm going to take a guess at the rapid train of thought running through this girl's brain as, mere seconds from death by firing squad, the ex-boyfriend she professes to hate decides it's a good time to make with the smoochies. Surprise, disbelief, outrage, and maybe something more? She doesn't try to pull away, that's for sure. Maybe she's twigged to Lindstrom's scam. Maybe she doesn't hate the kid as much as she pretends. Maybe, there, surrounded by frost and snow, pressed up against the warmth of him, mouth open to his hands unzipping her jacket and roaming the curve of her hips, the small of her back. A part of her remembers when this boy was her everything. And maybe a part of her missed it too. They press against the wall, their bodies remembering this heat, this old familiar thrill, the way they used to fit together so perfectly. The door slams open. Heavy footsteps, barked orders distorted through the vox units of an Atlas helmet. "Freeze! Get your fucking hands in!" The first voice drifts off as the second soldier speaks. "You gotta be fucking kidding me." The two new arrivals are fully armed, fully armoured, just a crossed word away from a whole lot of spent shell casings. A glance at the names on their breastplates shows the idents of Corporal Kazim Ali and Private Lyndon Lewis, two members of the squad that executed little Wang Ying over a few packs of stolen ration packs. Yeah, those assholes. As they burst in, they see Lindstrom half out of his armour, Grant in his arms, pressed against each other. The two break apart, looking shocked. Grant's lips are flushed, hair in mild disarray, Lindstrom's hands tangled up under her jacket. Doesn't take a hyperspatial reality theorist to figure out what they were up to. "You gotta be fucking kidding me," Lewis repeats. "Ah!" Lindstrom extricates his hands from Grant's clothes long enough to give a feeble wave. "Hey, chums, are you dusted?" Ali says. "Bringing your sugar to a restricted area?" "Christ," the other says, tapping her comset. "Nest, this is Lewis. That's a false alarm over at secondary array. Repeat, negative alarm. We are gold. Over." "Roger that, Lewis. Continue sweep. Over." "Affirmative." Shaking her head, the pounder looks at Lindstrom, eight insectoid eyes glowing on her helmet. "Chum, get a room next time, huh? We could have blown you—" "Hold up. Hold up." Ali tilts his head at Lindstrom. "Is that who I think it is?" "Who?" Lewis asks. "That little cherry who sucker-punched the Sarge." Ali looks at Lindstrom's breastplate on the floor, the ident on the chest. "It is him. Oh, you little bastard. You're done. Bringing a civvy into a blue zone just to get your rocks off? I'm gonna get your ass nailed to the fucking wall for that. Is that the way we do it round here, Corporal?" Lewis and Ali turn at the sound of another voice, Lindstrom peering over their shoulders. And there, standing in the swirling snow with her flechette cannon slung over one shoulder, is a female figure in an Atlas rig. Eyes glowing red. "Thou shalt kill" stenciled in neat letters above her ident. "Oshiro, Yukiko, Sergeant." "I asked you a question, Corporal," Oshiro says. "Is that the way we do it?" "This is a restricted area. This little sh** shouldn't be in here." "This little sh** shouldn't be in here, ma'am." Ali glances at Lewis, who simply shrugs. The math is simple. He's a corporal. Oshiro is a sergeant. Just like when MSG Marchino pulled rank on Oshiro, Oshiro is now dropping the same striped hammer on them. "You don't want to be that guy, do you, Ali?" Oshiro asks. "Don't want to be the kind to rat out fellow pounders just for getting a little sweet?" "No, ma'am," Ali finally replies. "So why don't you kids go find the rest of your squad and let me chew out this stupid f***ing rookie in peace?" The two pounders glance at each other, back to Lindstrom. They've got no cards to bluff with. Time to fold. They salute the sergeant, trudge back across the snow toward the slowly dying ruckus to the east, leaving Lindstrom, Grant, and Oshiro staring at each other in the biting chill. "What's your name, civilian?" the sergeant asks. "Grant," the girl stammers. "Asha Grant." Oshiro checks her digipad to make sure Grant exists in the colony database. Satisfied, she taps a few commands, stabs a button. The device spits out a small silver of plastic, time-stamped and dated. The sergeant hands it to the girl, her glowing stare locked on Lindstrom. "That leave pass is good for 20 minutes. You want to make it back to the domiciles by then. You better run." Grant glances at Lindstrom briefly, snatching the leave pass out of Oshiro's hand with a mumbled thank you. She's zipping up her jacket and is out the door, hurrying off into the snow, head bowed, hood pulled low. The kid opens his mouth to speak,